The Veteran Advocate Podcast is brought to you by Patriot Resume. So if you want to get a new job or if you want to get a promotion within your current job, one of the best ways to be ready for opportunities is by having a resume that's up to date. So resumes can be kind of complicated, and there is a fine art to translating your experience on paper. If you need help with that, Patriot Resume is here to help you. They specialize in non-traditional jobs such as police, firefighters, and especially military veterans. So if you need help, if you want to practice your interview, if you need a polished resume, check out www.patriotresume.com.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Veterans Advocate Podcast. My guest today is Andrew Brewer. Andrew is a veteran, and Andrew has quite a compelling story to tell about his service, some of the things he was exposed to, and what it was like for him when he left the service. This is one of those stories that's important, and not a whole lot of people know about it. And today we're going to talk mostly about burn pits. That's been a subject that's been growing steam, and I want to get the word out. And Andrew has a story to tell, and I want to help the world hear that story. So without further ado, here's Andrew. How are you today, sir?
Pretty good, Seth. I appreciate what you're doing. This means a lot to me, and I know to a lot of other veterans that you've already probably talked to, how much it means to them to spread the word like this about something. This is the new Agent Orange for our generation. And a lot of people are not realizing it. We're just trying to stay ahead of the ball by getting it taken care of now, not waiting until we're in our 60s and 70s, trying to combat the same thing that they had to before.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those guys didn't get the care that they deserved when they got back. We're blessed to have a better system and a more grateful society, but there's still a lot of work to do, and that comes down to education. And that's where we come in. So you have a story, and I want to help you tell that story. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of telling us in your own words, from beginning to kind of the end, what is your story in regards to burn pits?
I was born and raised in Indiana. Bainbridge was my main area, basically Indianapolis area. Went through when I turned of age, I never planned on going to the military, but it was one of those things that I was doing good and I had taken a year off of school and I was like, well, why not do something? And then I found out about this College First program, which is a big thing for the school or for the military at the time. And I got in and basically went to get my schooling paid for, was my initial intent. And I kind of dug deep and I was like, my unit got activated in early 2008. I joined 2007 and March, and in 2008 is when our unit got not activated, but put on the list to go as a National Guard unit out of Brazil, Indiana. And we had put on the list, and my commander kept asking me to go, but because I had the College First program, I didn't have to go. But it was one of those that I felt like I had to and I wanted to go. So I ended up signing up with my right to go ahead and volunteer to go over. We got to Iraq January 2nd, 2009. And we got there, we did the initial phase of getting in there and getting the climate adapted, and then, which was in Kuwait, and then moved over to Iraq. We went to, our main base was Al Asad, Iraq, air base. And then from there, I was actually part of one of the forward operating bases. I went to Kop Hit. It's, if I remember correctly, it's like northeast of Al Asad, and it was a little combat outpost. We were there for about 6 months until we closed it down. That's when I actually started learning about burn pits. I didn't realize the effect it would have, obviously, then. I just thought it was just like a big backyard fire. Well, it's a lot bigger scale than that. They did a lot of gasoline, jet fuel to light the fire, and we burnt anything and everything you could think of. I was actually one of the people. There was like 15 of us Army people, and we basically ran the basics, essentially, like the supply, the logistics, the food, the water, the fuel, and then the Marines did their in and out convoys and stuff like that. And they operated the burn pits, and there's many times that they're like, hey, take this to the burn pit, take this. And I'm taking forklifts full of, we call them like water bags, but like 100,000 gallon tank bags for like fuel or for water to dispose of them. If we were done with them, if they had a hole in it, we take it in there and they just lit it up and that was it. A lot of hazardous and white waste that we were supposed to properly dispose of. We never did. We just put it in the burn pit and try to get rid of it. Medical supplies, uniforms, trash, I mean, anything you can think of. And at first it was kind of cool, I thought, being 21. I'm like, okay, that's not a big deal. I mean, it's just trash and we're burning it. But then after a little bit, you start noticing the smell, that smell you can never get out of it, out of your nose. That black smoke, you could see it just covered the base. It was always rolling over, and the burn pit was never in one spot. The base itself was probably like a mile in diameter. I'd say probably maybe a mile from diameter from one end to the other. And they constantly moved the burn pits all around. And most of the time it was going 24/7. And a lot of people, I didn't come to realize this until later, but a lot of things you don't realize is you're breathing that in while you're sleeping. Not just walking around doing everything when you're sleeping, when you're not doing anything, you're still breathing that in. And that's when I guess it started really doing more damage too. So between during the day and at night, they were going through just doing open burn pit is what it was mainly called, was the open burn pit, where it just out in the middle of nowhere and you see the big black smokes and rolling over the whole entire COP. And we were there, and when we closed that base down, so when we closed that base down, we were, we don't need it, just get rid of it, go take it to the burn pit. So anything that wasn't really important, we just took it to the burn pit and burned it. And I think at one time, I think we had three different burn pits going at once, trying to burn off stuff to get rid of it so we didn't have to haul it back to Al-Asad. And after we got all, mostly everything burned up as we could, a few of the important things like our little supply like water and food and some other stuff is what we mainly took back. But other than that, everything else was very much burned to get rid of. Went back to Al-Asad, and they even still had burn pits because I don't know if you were familiar with Al-Asad, but the airbase is quite large, but you could even, anywhere in the base, most of the time you could see that black smoke just piling up and blowing over. I mean, it wasn't always blowing over, but one way or the other, it eventually started blowing over across the base. So even then it was still going through receiving it, and it was just part of the norm is what we took it in as. And that was a lot of my experience. I mean, I did a lot of running to the burn pits, being up close to it, and I've even helped light a few of them just because I thought it was cool at the time, not realizing now the difference of it. And then the trouble started basically there. We came back January, what was it? We came back a few days before Christmas in 2009, but we were released from active duty January 14 of 10, I think, or something like that. And even before then, I was able to pass my PT test, which I was proud of because it was always a hard thing for me to do. Well, as time went on, I started noticing my time started getting slower. And I'm like, I haven't changed any weight. I was working out. I was doing all the other things. I just couldn't do normal things. And I just blew it off like, okay, obviously I'm just doing something wrong and I didn't do it right. Well, I stayed in until, I was in until 2014, so another 4 years. And I constantly had to fight the PT test, trying to pass it. And honestly, ever since coming back from Iraq, I was never able to pass it the actual way of physically doing the push-ups, sit-ups, and run. I was able to do push-ups, sit-ups, no problem. The run, I just couldn't do it. My lungs weren't able to do what I needed to do. It wasn't until 2014 when I had my son. Well, I obviously didn't have my son. My wife did, but we had our son, and we were living in Avon, Indiana at the time. And I was picking him up from the bedroom, and I take him all the way out to the living room, and I'm talking 60, 70 foot, maybe. No, I mean, it wasn't a real big distance. And she's like, man, you're kind of winded. I'm like, I just picked him up and brought him in. I mean, he only weighed 6 pounds, 7 pounds, and walking from one side to the other. She was like, there's something wrong. And we always knew there was something wrong, but we kept trying to figure out what it was. I had been to, at that point in time, that was 2014, March, when my son was born. That's when I got out 4 days before my son was born, actually. And that started the process of us trying to figure out what's going on. I had a lot of other medical issues going on, and I was trying to figure out what it was. But the big thing to me was always my breathing. I didn't know what was wrong. Well, I went to the VA multiple times. At the time, I had private insurance as well. And I kept going to the VA and kept passing PFT tests, basically to test your lungs to see how you're doing. And they all fell in the normal limits. And I always pass them. So they're like, okay, there's nothing wrong with you. Well, I'm like, oh, there's still something wrong. I can't climb a flight of stairs. Even climbing a flight of stairs, I was heavy winded. And at the time, 25? I'm 32 now. So 6 years. I can't believe I can't remember. 26. So I was 26 at the time. And noticing that even climbing a flight of stairs, I was getting short winded. And something I used to never have a problem with. I used to take the stairs all the time because I didn't want to do the elevator. And obviously it was harder and harder for me to keep doing that. And so we started noticing some other things going on, and they started saying I was fine. I was like, okay, well, I went outside care to IU Health, and they tested. They're like, we see something wrong. We can tell that physically there's something wrong, but we can't figure out what it is, and we just don't know how to help. At that time, I was at the point of like, okay, well, obviously I can't find anybody, I don't know enough. And Lauren Price is who actually I am got a hold of, and it was through the Veterans Advocates, I believe, or Burn Pit Registry. I forget how we connected again. I'd have to talk to my wife to remember, but anyway, we got a hold of her, and she invited us into this group, and she started talking to us, and she told us her story. I was like, man, that sounds really familiar. Like, everything that was happening with me was kind of the same. I'm like, okay, so what did you do? And I still had private insurance at the time. And my wife's like, after they talked for a little bit, and then I started really getting to know Lauren on a personal level, doing all the traveling I've done with her and stuff. She was like, hey, there's Dr. Robert Miller out of Nashville, Tennessee. If you want to, if you can afford it, if you can do it, that's the person you need to go see. And I know you said something about you were trying to talk to him or try to, if you get his part of it. But basically, he was the one that led that push initially about the burn pits, and he discovered that there is a problem here, and this is something. Sorry, talking a lot sometimes, I start getting short. Talking to him, he's like, I was the one that led the thing, me and my wife. I don't remember the day that we flew to Nashville, Tennessee to see him. She would know the dates. I'm not really good with dates, except for the one. There's one date I remember is that was April 16th of 2018 is when I got my diagnosis. That one I remember. But before then, it was like November, December of 17. We went out there, talked to him, and he was like, here, can you do me this? What was it? He said something about this is his walking test. I don't know exactly what he calls it, but it was like walking test. He had a little pulsometer that he put on my finger, and he said, stand right here, this is what it is. I want you to walk with me and walk around my office. It wasn't a very big, like a normal little office. And he's like, I want you to walk around there with me. We walked two laps, and he started seeing my pulse ox start dropping down. And he was like, okay, I'm pretty sure I already know what it is. And I was like, really? He's like, the only way that I can actually give a definitive answer is we have to do a lung biopsy. That's the only way to actually confirm the diagnosis. But based off of everything that I've seen you do, your story and everything else, everything lines up to, it sounds like it's in the burn pits that basically closed the inside of my lungs up or filled the smaller airways. And I think we visited him one more time in like January or something like that. And then I think it was end of March, we visited the last time, which was the pre-op to make sure everything was good. Everything was good to go. He was like, okay, now you're gonna come back in. I had met the thoracic surgeon, talked to him. He went through and explained the process. This is what I'm gonna do. I wanna make three incisions. I believe it's on the right side. Three incisions, and I wanna go and get a couple pieces to biopsy, and then we'll be able to figure out from there. And it was April 16th, 2018. We were still staying at a hotel room because I was not cleared to fly. And my wife had been in an accident 2 weeks prior. So driving wasn't the best idea. So we actually ended up staying in a hotel room for almost a month in Nashville. And we had that biopsy. He called me and he goes, I'd like for us, you to come in. I need to talk to you to confirm everything, but my studies were correct. And you do have obliterated bronchiolitis is, I believe, the official diagnosis of what it's called. There's a lot of different names, and I might be wrong on this, but I've been also told that it's kind of referred to like popcorn lung. Basically, it fills up the smaller airways in your lungs, which I guess helps you breathe. And with those being filled up with the black stuff from the burn pits and stuff, it makes it much harder to breathe. And that's where it basically starts to process. And basically, my lungs haven't completely shut down, but they're not at their normal capacity for my age. We went into his office. and sat down and talked to him, and we were trying to figure out what to do. At that time, 2018, we had been down in Florida for about a year or so for my son, for he had medical issues, and moving down helped him. And I was in the transition of moving down because I was working up north, and I was traveling back down here. And I was like, what does this mean for me, having obliterated bronchiolitis? He goes, I can't give you an exact diagnosis. He says, but I can tell you that it is considered a terminal lung condition. You could live 30 years, but I have seen much that have only made it half that. He goes, I can say 30, but you should be very happy if you make it another 15. So it was like a very weird diagnosis of, like, at the time I was only 30 years old and I just got a terminal diagnosis and trying to figure out all this. And the biggest problem for me was when I found out I've been battling the VA with this the whole entire time. I've been kept, hey, there's this issue. He's like, well, just file the brain pit registry. It's fine, it'll help you. Okay, I filed that. That's a piece of paper for you to sign to say possibly there is something wrong, but it doesn't do anything. And it's, to me, it's pointless as of right now. Governor Bill Ruckus, he's trying to make it bigger and more beneficial, I guess. He's trying to turn it into something along with Warren and some other ones, trying to turn it into something more than just a piece of paper that we signed saying, hey, we were here and that was it. And I think the last 2 years has done a lot. We got an answer that I didn't necessarily want, but an answer that I felt like it was needed. To know of the terminal diagnosis, it's like, great, now there's an expiration time. And I know that's not the exact way how it works, but now I'm burning the candle at both ends, and I don't want to not live my life the way I want to, or I want to spend time with my family. I want to do everything I can to get the best out of it. And so I guess I've view a lot of things differently now, and I take different viewpoints on stuff because I don't take the things for granted, because I don't know the last day. Yes, I know tomorrow I can get in a car accident and not make it. I understand that, but when you get a diagnosis of something that was caused by the military, especially after they were supposed to stop doing the open burn pits, I believe it was in 2006, 2008, or somewhere in there, they got the incinerators that they were supposed to be using, but it wasn't effective for them to get it set up and make them work. So they started doing the open air burn pits and kept doing them. And I think there was supposed to be an official stop order in like 2013 that they were supposed to stop doing the open burn pits. And I don't know, I know about a year ago when I was at a conference in Tampa, there was another sighting that they've been trying to do it only at dark so you can't see it as often, but they're still doing the burn pits. They're just trying to sneak around not to be noticed of it. Instead of spending the extra time, the incinerators were there, they just didn't want to set them up. But they'd rather just do the open air, which puts us at risk. And I mean, I guess that's the best way to summarize it all.
Thank you for sharing that story. That's That's difficult, man. And, you know, that tugs on the heartstrings. And I've met a lot of people who've had very similar stories, but the theme is all the same in that guys like you were exposed to things while in service, and that's terrible. But what's more terrible is that the VA isn't doing enough to help people. You know, it'd be one thing if you go to the VA and they say, okay, yeah, we're going to take care of you, but you got to fight tooth and nail with the VA just to get recognized, let alone get any kind of treatment. And to my knowledge, the VA is fully aware of this issue, and the diagnosis you have is common, but I don't know that there's a single doctor in the entire VA system that does diagnose that and can even treat that. So we have to go to the civilian world. And I keep hearing this Robert Miller guy, and I need to talk to him because, man, everybody just rants and raves about how awesome he is.
If it wasn't for him, we would never know where we're at. Now, I can't confirm any of this, but what I've been told, I have a pulmonologist out of that helps me with my lungs, and we've done all the treatments that we can that are out there up to date, and none of it's helped me a little bit more than before. It's still basically been the same level. It hasn't increased it or made it worse or anything like that. It's the same level, and it hasn't benefited. And the pulmonologist, I don't know how exactly he said it, but basically they know of it, but to make a statement of they got this from the burn pits, they can't make those statements because it falls back on them. So to me, when I heard that, told me that there's more to it than what they want to say. They know about it, but they don't want to, they're even trying to keep more people quiet about it, but not letting them speak up. Because if you talk to Miller, from my understanding, he basically, for the lack of better terms, he got blackballed from the military when he did it, and he made the statements of, he did the tests, he ran all these, and these all confirmed that, hey, this is what it was. And he started speaking up about it. And when he started speaking up about it, he got backlash from it, from the government. And they basically like turned his back on him. And every time he tried to set up a meeting to go talk to them in a congressional factor or however that goes, they said that they either canceled, moved it, changed times, basically trying to do everything they could to avoid him to speak, if that makes sense. And to hear that from Dr. Robert Miller, that that's happened, and then on top of it, talking to other doctors at the VA about the lung condition, and they're like, I can't really confirm or deny, I can't tell you yes or no, which to me in my head tells me that they know more than what they want to say. They're just only saying what they can to protect themselves, which, I mean, I understand you got to protect yourself, but it doesn't look like they have the best interest in us. They have their own interests.
Yes, that's absolutely true. You know, from everyone I've talked to, including Lauren Price, who I've also interviewed, the real problem is that it all comes down to money. It's not that they don't want to help veterans per se. It's that if they recognize burn pits as a common cause of your condition and various others, there isn't enough money available to open up for treatment and disability claims for all the veterans. And that's exactly true of your condition, but also of Agent Orange. There are enough veterans affected by Agent Orange alone that if the government fully acknowledged the harm that they caused and paid out disability claims and provided health insurance, it would bankrupt the VA in 1 year. with just Agent Orange alone. So I hate to say it, but yeah, it's all financial.
And that's worse when I don't even know how many people have died, even just from the burn pits. I know the Agent Orange, it's been around a lot longer. So the numbers obviously are higher because it's been there. I don't know if Lauren talked to you. There's a show out there, a movie. I forget the guy that made it now. It was about burn pits. And a few people that she knows was actually in that video. They filmed it. I'd have to ask my wife, maybe.
Is it a Delay, Deny, Hope You Die?
Thank you. Yep, that's exactly the movie. That's how I first actually met Lauren Price. Was there was a showing, and she's like, "Hey, come down to Tampa. I got your ticket. We get in to watch it." And I went and watched it, and I could not believe. Like, I'm getting cold chills right now just remembering seeing that video. It's a powerful statement. And I think by the time that they went, they showed it everywhere, like two or three of them already had passed away that was in that video because of how some people got it worse than others, which I understand, but it's already taking lives and it's only been 10 or 19 years since we first started. Or 2001. So yeah, 19 years. And we already got a death toll going. And there's still many more years ago. And I know that's nothing compared to what Agent Orange had. And I know Agent Orange is up there with numbers. But Burn Pits is in the same realm, I guess, of Agent Orange.
Yep, absolutely. You know, it's a shame, and I'm not sure what can be done about it, but I do know that, you know, as long as I'm around, I'm going to do what I can to make sure people don't forget. And that's all I can do. And if I can get the attention of some senators and some congressmen and ruffle some feathers, then I absolutely will. But, you know, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story, because it's guys like you that are getting ahead of this. So hopefully we don't have to wait 50 years like the Vietnam guys. You know, hopefully that we can get some good help and get some good lobbies going for recognition at the federal level and get this thing opened up as wide as possible, as fast as possible.
No, that would be great. And I greatly appreciate everything that you've done. I appreciate letting me be on your show to tell my story. And as long as I'm still here, I'll still keep telling my story. And I'm trying to keep getting it out because not enough people know. And somebody like you doing what you're doing is helping more than what most other people can do. So I greatly appreciate you taking the time out to talk and let me tell my story.
No, appreciate it. You know, I'll go the extra mile for my veterans. You know, I'm a veteran myself. So, you know, I don't have the same struggles that you do, but, you know, we're all in this together.
We're
a brotherhood. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, hey, man, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. I know it's probably not the easiest thing to tell, but it's important to tell it so people know.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Seth. I greatly appreciate it.